Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
And we welcome you into the playbook. It's a Wednesday on Patriots.com radio. John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino for the opening hour. Doug Kide from Nesson, who covers the New England Patriots for Nesson.com. He'll join us in hour number two of the program. He wrote something pretty interesting yesterday that, quite frankly, I wanted to go over today with him and with you because it has sort of been a... It has sort of been a crossroads, which is really unusual to say that you're going to have a crossroads for a season and for a team and for a program after 2 weeks of the NFL season. But based on, Eric, where we've been, where we've come from, where the fans have been especially, I can understand why people would think that in all honesty.
Yeah, because most people have higher expectations for this team than what they're seeing.
Yeah,
and
yeah, it's all about expectations.
Sure,
and not living up to them, at least at this stage of the game.
Right.
Even though we spent yesterday almost the entire program trying to explain, this team's still 2-0.
Yeah,
right.
They are. You're right. They are. And if you were expecting great football after two wins, you're going to be disappointed. If you were expecting growing pains, then you're not disappointed. You're at where you thought they were going to be.
What did Al Davis say? What was his famous saying?
Other than just win, baby?
Just win, baby.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all that matters. In the national at any pro level, pick a sport. In college sports, I feel like style points are huge. Why? Because college teams are rated.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And
human
so you have the human factor coming in because you've got
much longer,
you've got a top 25 poll that you got to compete for every week and yada yada. So, yeah, style points are big in collegiate sports. In pro sports, style points mean squat. They don't mean anything. It's all about winning. It's all about being a champion. It's all about the ring, the bling, the hardware, the trophy. It's all about, you know, commanding the big bucks. It's all about living, you know, forever, you know, and you do that when you win. And so style points don't matter. They haven't mattered for eons, probably since pro sports came into play. Who knows? I mean, do we want to go back to the 1919 Chicago White Sox or something? No. But certainly since the NFL came into play, I think, and hit the public consciousness,
the
really.
The modern era of the
Yeah,
NFL.
The modern era yeah. of the NFL. And I would even go back as far as saying that would include the 1960s Green Bay Packers, because they were the first, you know, real dynasty that I think made an impact on people that could still be considered present-day sports fans. I mean, you go back and say,
the Super Bowls.
Yeah, the 1921
NFL Yankees, championship.
Yeah, 1929 Yankees were a pretty good dynasty too, but I'm just saying a
pro sports wasn't what it is now until
it started
in the like the 70s and early 80s.
After the merger.
Yeah, after the merger.
After the merger.
Right.
In 1970 when the AFL and NFL got together and said, hey,
this
let's
is
not,
ridiculous.
Yeah, let's get together here. We've got some viable things here in the AFL.
Right.
You need to take us in. And the NFL said, you know what? You're right. Mm-hmm. So the Patriots moved from the AFL to the NFL with the Broncos and a few other choice selections, mm-hmm. and voila. And then we expanded in 1976, and you brought in two brand new teams in Seattle and Tampa Bay. And obviously they've had, you know, a mixed bag of results, but they've both been to Super Bowls.
Yeah, and the Bucs have won it.
Bucs have also been a champion. You know, and we, you know, laugh at their former coach, you know, and call him Chucky on Monday Night Football, you know. So the fact of the matter is that expectations are always elevated because of the style point. That's what I really believe, and that's something we'll get into probably a little bit with Doug in the next hour. But I just think that there's a misconception there over – how winning and losing should be treated in the professional ranks. I mean, Tampa Bay is a great example this week. And I think Bill in his press conference earlier today, and obviously you can hear it here on the website, but his press conference earlier today, if you missed it, he was very, you know, complimentary of the Bucks, called them an explosive team, I think, to paraphrase. Mm-hmm. I think he even used that verb, if I'm not mistaken, that adjective, I should say. And then I'm thinking, oh, this is an 0-2 team. But the fact of the matter is that style point-wise, they're still pretty good. They might be guilty of some self-inflicted wounds.
Yeah.
Certainly in the first week, you can say that.
They're not at 100%, certainly.
Right, and neither are the Patriots.
As far as clicking on all cylinders and health-wise, they're not 100%.
Right, and neither are the Patriots, but they certainly have some significant pieces to that puzzle on both sides of the ball that present some problems this week for New England.
Oh, yeah.
And the bottom line is, if you're going to look at the bottom line, and if you're going to hold me to my bottom line standard, a win is a win is a win is a win, well, this team is two kicks away from being 2-0.
They are.
So that should right there grab your attention. It's not the seventh best team according to the power rankings against the 30th best team according to the power rankings.
No.
That is complete and total and utter foolishness.
The Bucks and Patriots are a lot closer after two games than their record would indicate.
No doubt. No doubt. They could be one of the eight teams that are 2-0 right now. We talked about that in yesterday's show.
At least 1-1.
Certainly. Probably should
at least
be
one and one.
Probably should be. If they don't commit that stupid penalty against the Jets, they beat
the Jets.
Absolutely
beat the Jets.
So, yeah.
The Saints, I think the better team
probably
did
won.
Win that game.
Probably.
But they should have beaten the Jets.
Yeah. Probably.
They should have beaten the Jets. And you could argue that New England should have lost to Buffalo.
Oh, absolutely. You can make the argument. Buffalo fans should probably be making the argument that they could be 2-0 right now.
So it's really kind of like two 1-1 teams coming this Sunday.
At best, yeah. But it is what it is, which is our favorite saying.
It's 2-0 against 0-2.
It's 2-0 against 0-2.
But it doesn't feel like it.
No, it does not feel like it. And I today started kind of taking the sneak peek around the corner at what lies ahead. And I'm sure we've had some other fans do the same thing. And, you know, far be it from anybody down the hallway do that, because that's verboten. They don't do that.
Right.
But when you take...
It's a good word of the day, John.
Thank you very much, but I already beat you to that one. That one cannot be used.
No.
By the way, I want you to know that my girlfriend Robin says that you've repeated a couple of words of the day.
Incorrect, Robin. Incorrect.
Because she's a faithful listener.
Which ones?
She thought that you used What was our word of the day on Tuesday? Yesterday. What was our word of the day?
Yesterday I used recrudesce.
Recrudesce. All right. It wasn't recrudesce. Maybe it was the one that we used last Thursday.
I don't keep
or last Wednesday, whenever the last one was.
I know.
But she said, I swear I'd heard that word before.
Well,
I
she said, might have heard
sure,
the word before.
Are you sure, though, that you didn't hear the word on
me.
This show
from
Eric? Because that's what we do. I mean, we like to elevate our audience.
Yeah. I may have used the word in discussion, you know.
Maybe
she heard it that way, but it wasn't.
Maybe
I don't
know.
She I know for
though,
sure
that,
I don't.
That
you
you
I
had used it as a word of the day.
Words of the day. No,
right.
No.
Well, we'll consider her thoroughly chastised.
Now, unless she can find the evidence, get the proof, and go back and listen to all of the air checks, then.
You know what? She'd do that too.
I don't want to mess with her.
She's tough.
I'll tell you what, Robin. You're not going to have a repeat of today. I guarantee you that.
Okay. Something to look forward to.
Yes.
All right. Here's how you reach us on the program. Always, always the email address, webradio@patriots.com. So fire off emails, questions, concerns, criticisms, whatever you got. The toll-free telephone number, 855-PATS-500, 855-PATS-500, or the Ace Ticket hotline is 508-298-0398. Again, 508-298-0398. On social media, the Twitter handle @JRBroadcaster, @E_Scal, SCAL. Or on Facebook, find me John.Rook, ROOKE. Ready, set, go. Now, couple of things that I wanted to open up with today. Number one, basically it has to do with news of the day. You were in listening to Coach Bill. You heard Tom.
Yep.
You saw the 20 minutes of practice that they allow us to see today.
Yep.
What can you tell us about who was out there and who looked what?
I'll start with the good news.
Go.
Which is Danny Amendola continues to suit up in practice.
I'm finding that amazing, by the way.
Not well. I mean, at least from what we're seeing, he can't really run that 100%. He's struggling for sure, John, mm-hmm. which I even hesitate to call it good news because I don't know how much more damage he's doing to himself or not. But he's out there, full pads today. Mm. Gronk is out there, continues to practice. He's almost become an afterthought. It's funny since Amendola's gotten hurt, you know. But those two guys are out there and practicing. One, I'd say Gronk looks better than the other. Aqib Talib returned. He was missing the other day. And that, he told us today, was not injury-related. He had a family emergency he had to attend to, which was why he was out. And Alphonso Dennard had his court appearance, obviously, on Monday. So those two guys were back on the field. The only two missing were Slater and today a new one, Marquise Cole. Not sure what his issue was.
Wasn't he hurt, though, in the game last Thursday?
But he was at practice the other day, okay. So a little bit of a mystery what exactly is wrong with him.
What's the timetable for Slater? Has anybody actually said that?
I think I saw 6 weeks.
Six weeks.
Possibly.
So he has a broken wrist, too?
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got a
kind of like Vereen.
A couple of broken wrists to deal with.
Yeah.
Right?
Or a broken bone in the hand was the initial report that I saw. I don't know if it's actually the wrist or not. It could be somewhere else.
Okay.
But it's in that area, general area. Gronkowski talked today at his locker after practice, said he definitely has made progress since last week,
mm-hmm.
And feels like he's getting closer to the point when he can return. But he
several
wouldn't.
Reports this week had him at 50-50.
I'd say that's probably reasonable because I still
what
don't
do you think
the determining
factor would be?
I still think he looks. I think he looks better than he did in drills, which is basically all we see. 3 weeks ago when he first came back to practice, as far as his blocking, his general movement, he looks like he's more back to normal. That's why I think people are sort of putting him on the back burner because it's almost like he's. It looks like he's getting better, whereas Amendola looks like it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So I would err on the side of caution still with him and not play him this week and wait as long as absolutely possible before you bring him back.
Yeah, because I think there was some and I think that's a great point and one of the things that I did want to try to touch on today. Fact of the matter is that there was some criticism of both Gronk and the coaching staff for bringing him back early after the first arm injury a year ago. And then he re-broke
sure.
the arm
sure.
and then had to go have the surgery that caused the infection
right.
that delayed the process of healing up his back injury.
Or yeah, when he could have the back
when
surgery.
He could have the surgery.
Right, yeah, because if we don't have the recurrence of the break in the forearm,
mm-hmm.
he doesn't have the infection from the subsequent surgery that postpones the back surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So he would have had the back surgery back in February, and this would have been long gone. He would have been ready for training camp. He'd have been playing. It's a, you know, Monday morning quarterback situation here, but you're right. That's the significance of what they did with him last year at
yeah.
the end of the year.
Which is even more reason why I think they should
probably be careful
with him.
That's what I say.
But at the same time, I mentioned just a few moments ago about turning the page, peeking around the corner. At the schedule
just
and what's coming
bit.
Up. Just a smidge.
You've
love
got
that word.
Very good team in Cincinnati. You've got a good team in New Orleans. You've got Atlanta.
Those three
right
teams back to back to back. That's formidable.
Yeah, and I predicted they'd start 3-0 and they'd wind up 3-3 after six games.
I believe.
And nothing I've seen is making me change that.
I think we both did. I think we both said this team would be 3-3 after six.
Six games. I'm not seeing anything yet that makes me change my mind. You?
No. Especially in light of the injuries. I mean, we made these prognostications that we both got hammered for sufficiently, but we made these prognostications.
So far, we're right.
So far. So far. Let's not forget that, because we'd get hammered if we were wrong, so that's fine. But we made these prognostications before the injuries set in.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we knew Gronk.
Well that was
but
one.
We didn't know about Amendola. We didn't know about Vereen. Now,
yeah.
Let me. Slater.
I think this also directly. God, I'm having a hard time today. What the hell's a problem with me?
Your tongue.
The tongue is tied. Okay. I think that a lot of what we're talking about here, unfortunately, right now, is also tied directly, not necessarily indirectly, but directly to the situation in the offseason with Aaron Hernandez. Because with Hernandez's unavailability from a football perspective, I'm going to set aside the human perspective here for a moment, okay? Because it was dastardly, it was despicable, it was inhuman, all right? But, and I'm going to try, believe it or not, in my best straight down the middle, you know, fastball here, I'm going to try to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he's innocent until proven guilty. And he'll have his day in court. And then when the court says what they need to say, and when it all is said and done, when it's all washed out, then that's it. However, there's no way on God's green earth, there's just no way that anybody inside this organization really could have foreseen the depths of what happened here. Could they have...
The fallout
yes,
on the
field, fallout,
you mean?
The fallout for on the field, specifically on the field. There's no way, because what he meant to the team's offense last year, in not only being an option for Gronk, not only lining up in the slot, not only lining up in the backfield as an H-back, not only for blocking, not only being out wide as a receiver. We saw him in all of these particular instances.
Yeah.
And so when you are planning for the season and you're drafting for the season and you're selecting players that you believe that are going to be a perfect fit for what you want to do in a particular year, and all of a sudden a major cog is plucked out that you didn't, I mean, I think they all know that injuries can happen, but they figure, oh, well, if an injury happens, we have Jake Ballard, or we have Daniel Fells, or we have Zach Sudfeld, or, you know, there was a lot of depth. Remember, we were even laughing, I think, at some point in the offseason around the draft time about the plethora of tight ends that this team had. And now they're dead last in tight ends thrown to in the NFL. Dead last. So you cannot tell me that Hernandez's absence, for whatever reason, hasn't had a significant impact on this team in its planning, in its growth, in its personnel moves. It has touched every, there's a tentacle out in almost in every aspect here.
Yeah.
And I think it's time that from a football sense, at the very least, we don't ignore this and we talk about it a little bit, because as we see a team struggling to find itself offensively, when we thought that the offense was going to be fine, oh, they got Tom Brady back there, they're going to be fine. No, they're not fine. Tom's human, even though he's a pretty good human, but he's still human. And I think we're learning that this is a much more difficult process to retool an offense that is predicated on timing almost as much, if not more, than anything else. This has been a tough thing for all parties to handle, players and coaches alike.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
And they're, you know, it's when you think about that right now, none of their leading receivers from last year are on the field.
No, nobody.
They're either not on the team or they're, you know, being prevented from
you
taking
the field.
You
just had Julian Edelman catch 13 balls.
Yeah.
Now, say that slowly and really consider that.
Not just the fact that he had just caught 13 balls. He was a guy that they waited until the very last minute in free agency to re-sign.
Yeah.
And at that, to a one-year deal with no guaranteed money, which tells you how much they thought of him in the offseason. He wasn't a priority to bring back. He was an afterthought, John. And now he's your leading receiver right now.
Right.
The guy you can most depend on. That's frightening a little bit.
Well,
thankfully he's producing. Thankfully he's staying healthy so far, knock on wood.
Frightening. I'd say to an extent it's scary because he's a guy that you haven't had to depend on before. He was always one of those. He was always considered to be more of the glue guy.
He's a good player.
He's a good player. But I think he's thought of in a lot of the same sense that Welker was, and that you know, he's a great player, he's doing great things, but he's replaceable.
Welker was before he got here, you mean, or at the end of his time here?
Well, toward the end of his time here. But I think that
I never thought
Edelman
was
Welker, Edelman's thought of as Welker light.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
And so if he's Welker light, and then Amendola's the new Welker, and now you're
we were sold that he's a better Welker.
We were sold that he was a better Welker. Obviously, the team bought that because they decided not to re-sign Welker and bring him in. But you're relying on Welker light to basically carry your load. And again, that's not really a fair, you know, description of what, you know, Julian Edelman, you know, has done and means to the team because he is his own player. I mean, here's a guy that could also line up and be an emergency quarterback if you needed him just because he played quarterback probably in college.
Or cornerback.
Yes, exactly. He could be, Troy Brown, I think, if they let him. I mean,
and Troy Brown was an emergency quarterback.
Sure he was. He was.
He was all those things.
People forget that. Yeah. Not only did he play corner, but he could also line up and be quarterback if he had to.
Well, Edelman is a cross between Welker and Troy Brown with all of the things that he can do.
Right.
And he's a very good athlete.
So there's a role, and there always will be a role. He's a great athlete. So, but if he's not a game breaker. He's not the be-all to end-all. He's not the super stud that teams need to win championships with.
No, but right now what Tom Brady needs is someone he can rely on, and that's what he's got right now.
And what for the life of me, I thought the one fatal flaw that the Jets had last week is they didn't somehow, you know, load up the middle of the field and make it difficult for Edelman to catch 13 passes. I mean, why don't you even respect the fact that Tom's coming after him and put two people on him and make Tom beat you with the iffy rookie receivers? Because the Jets didn't really do that. They really didn't. They didn't do that.
Yeah.
And so I lay a lot of that blame on the Jets' feet. At the Jets' feet for last week. I thought that was dumb. And frankly, when you have two of the best, you know, defensive backs maybe in the game right now, Deshaun Goldson, who's going to be, he's got a reprieve this week, let's say that, right?
He won his appeal.
Big hit that he, you know, put on, help me. Who did he put the hit on?
I can't remember.
From the Saints. Darren Sproles. Thank you. Darren Sproles.
I didn't help you at all. So
okay.
You're gonna have to
thank me. No, it just popped in my head. Sometimes this old addled brain actually comes up with one. He survived the suspension, but he was fined $100,000, which is significant for a hit. But when you have a guy like him back there, you got a guy like Darrell Revis back there, who the Jets were foolish to give up on, you know, even to start the entire process here. Imagine that Jets D if they still had Revis back there. Mm. Holy crap.
Yeah, the Patriots might have lost that game.
They would have lost. I think they would have lost. I think he'd have been the difference of the game, because he would have been up on Edelman and said, all right, now try to throw to him, suckers. Mm. It wouldn't have happened. It just wouldn't have happened.
It would have been a lot more difficult.
It would have been terribly difficult. Although we don't know if the Jets' offense would have gotten in the way of itself. So obviously,
well, but the New England offense might not have been able to score the way as they did.
It's all fair. It's all fair, and that's why we're here, because we discuss things like this. Fact of the matter is that Tampa's defense is going to be a significant challenge for the young receivers again. Now, we hope that we see some progress. We hope that we see some strides. But if I'm Tampa, there's no way that I'm letting Julian Edelman out of my sight on Sunday.
Well, you're putting Revis on him.
Easily. Absolutely easily. And, you know, and you're probably saying, okay.
And then we'll see.
One-on-one.
What else?
Here we go.
Yeah.
Hit one-on-one. If you can beat him.
Tompkins.
Yeah. All right.
Boyce.
Come on, fellas. If you can do
it. I even say start throwing to who, man?
You got to.
Start throwing
That's another thing that I wanted to bring up today.
Devlin. Yeah,
James.
Get him involved.
Devlin, you got to throw
to.
Who, man, you got to throw to. And a lot of that is because of the Hernandez factor that I brought into here. Such a significant piece of the puzzle in being an option, and you're not trying to find an answer for him. You're trying to retool it. And I'm not so sure that's the right way to go. I mean, I realize you're down personnel-wise, but if you're going to line up the position, don't you have to at least make him a threat? It's kind of like in basketball vernacular, in basketball parlance, right? You got four guys out on the field, or fell out on the court, and you got one guy who's a defensive specialist. So, but when the ball's on the offensive court, you're already
Dennis Rodman.
Your liability, correct.
Dennis Rodman was on this court. You knew he was there for defense.
You don't have to guard
or
him.
Offensive rebounds.
You don't have to guard him because you know he's not going to be a threat to score.
You only have to guard him when his team shoots.
Right.
You have to try to box him out.
Box him out, and that's really the
Which
same
tough
deal.
To do.
Yes, and that it was a tough thing to do, regardless of his friendship with the North Korean dictator or whatever, which is unbelievable, isn't it? All right, I'm starting to digress.
Yeah,
I'm not
going
to quite go that far.
Okay,
not going to quite go that far. All I'm saying is that it's the same idea.
Yeah, right.
There's got to be other options. You've got to throw to these guys. Even if they don't catch the ball, you still got to throw to them in order to make your entire offense work.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, no, maybe? You're an
I
idiot?
Do.
What?
No, I totally agree. Okay. That's why I brought it up. I think I'm frankly a little surprised that they haven't thrown to those guys more.
All right, 855 Pats 500. Good afternoon to Big Al in Valdosta, Georgia. Hello, Al.
Boys, how you doing?
Excellent. How are you?
Very good, John. Rook.
You must have been busy if it took you to week three of the program to call in.
Well, I'm just kind of easing into the season.
You called the other show, didn't you?
I called yesterday, and you know, I called the other show yesterday,
I should hang up on it.
I said two words that you just shouldn't say.
Tim Tebow.
And, That's exactly right.
Oh, what are you doing now? What kind of trouble are you starting now?
I guess I did. I mean, I just mentioned his name. I didn't even mention it with any sort of bluster or any sort of, sort of confrontation.
In what context did you mention T-squared?
Well, let me refresh your memory.
No. I don't want any refreshing of anything where he's concerned. Just tell me the context in which you brought his name up.
Well, it was in the context of our conversation that we had last year, John. Forgive me, when Tim Tebow was still on the Jets.
Yeah.
And we were looking ahead to this year, thinking he might be
a good option for the Patriots.
And we, I think the exact words that you uttered to me on this very program.
Really? What were they?
And you can play back the tape.
We'll do that when we go get the word of the day.
I don't know if this is exact or not, but this is close to what you said. I would love to see the Patriots pick up Tim Tebow and put him together with Josh McDaniel and have them work together and just see what they can come up with.
And you know what? I absolutely backed that statement up. I was glad when they picked him up.
I was too.
I agree with you 10,000%, and I'm glad that they picked him up too.
But it didn't work.
Well, yes, but there's another way that I still think it could work if we had given it a chance and it showed up Thursday night.
Well, but they gave him a pretty good chance, and
I know,
there was never any chance that he was going to do anything other than play quarterback. Now, if he had gone to, I think, Josh and said, can I try H-back? Can I try fullback? Can
right.
I try, you know, right. something else? Then I think that they might have been more receptive to keeping him around.
I think they probably did go.
There's a lot of things, John, behind the scenes that we'll never know, and I don't need to know that. I'm just talking about what I think would work on the field that the Patriots need, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if God forbid, decisions in football get made based on that. But, you know, they don't all get made based on that anymore, and I understand that.
Yep, right.
But I believe that, for example, Thursday night, when we had the turnover early in the game, and all of a sudden we had a first and goal inside the 10, suddenly Devin McCourty has the ball, we got a first and goal inside the 10.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that would be Tebow time.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tom Brady struggles. I'm sorry. I don't care about the red zone stats. I'm not talking about the red zone. I'm talking about first and goal inside the 10, and Tom Brady struggles first and goal inside the 10. He always has for 10 years. It isn't anything that's just a recent thing or when we had the receivers or when we didn't have, we had kid receivers, or we had veteran, doesn't matter. First and goal inside the 10, the man struggles. Now, it may be that the only thing in professional football that Tim Tebow will ever be able to do is first and goal inside the 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But by golly, he can do that.
Yeah.
He's a threat to roll out. He's a threat to throw. He's a threat to run. He can run over you. He can run around you. He can do all that stuff. He can do first and goal inside the 10. He did it his freshman year at Florida when he backed up Chris Lee.
And they won
a national championship doing just that. The only thing he did on that team
right,
was first
but,
and goal inside the 10.
But the Patriots weren't going to take the ball out of Tom Brady's hands. They're just not going to do that, okay?
I know.
There's nobody better in the current NFL than short yardage situations when it calls for a sneak than Tom Brady. And you also know that. So
you want to keep getting Tom Brady hit at age 37 or 38?
I don't. I don't, but I'm saying this is what they're thinking. This is
okay.
The other point of view. He needed to come and say himself that he wanted a chance to try to play somewhere else. The Patriots didn't get that from him. He wanted
right.
to live or die as a quarterback. And guess
he
what? Rest in peace, Tim.
Or something. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the whole difference right there. Now, if he changes his mind, well, it's possible that the ship has sailed.
Yep. That's
it's possible the ship has sailed.
They could technically still bring him back, but it probably has failed.
But I get all that. Here's the other thing. If he doesn't get a job.
I'm trying to point out something on the field that I believe would work, that would be a strength that kid has that would cover for a weakness that Tom Brady has on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all the atmospherics and the money and everything else, I understand that all goes into it. I'll never probably totally understand that. I never will. And I really don't care to. It's enough for me to try to understand what's going on the field. That's enough.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, first and goal inside the 10, he's a better quarterback than Tom Brady. And you wouldn't be taking Brady out of the game because you got a turnover. Would you be pulling Brady?
Would you be saying that? Would you be saying that, Al? Would you be saying that if Gronk was on the field?
I'd be saying that if anybody's on the field. I said that to the PFW guys a week after we picked up Tebow, and we had the same conversation. And of course, you know, they think it's lunacy because they don't know anything about what Tim Tebow did at Florida when he was a freshman, and they don't pay attention to that. And I guess they don't get paid to pay attention to that. And I understand. But that's what he did. John Rook can tell you. That's what he did his freshman year at Florida. He backed up Chris Leak. Chris Leak was the full-time quarterback. The only thing Tim Tebow did was first and goal inside the 10, and it didn't seem to hurt them a bit. Now, it may be easier to get away with that in college. And when you get to the pros, everybody's got agendas and agents. And I get all of that. I'm just saying what would work on the field that we need. And we need somebody first and goal inside the 10 because – Tom Brady, I'm sorry. From the 10 to the 20, he ought to be bronzed. He's a world beater. That's a batting practice fastball on 2-0 for Tom Brady if he's first and 10 at the 16. But you move him 10 yards to the 6 and give him a first and goal? I'm sorry. The eye in the sky does not lie. He blows up right there. Because if you blitz him, and all the teams blitz down there because they don't have much field to cover, so they blitz the quarterback. And if you get him off his spot, the play's over. It's just over.
Well, you bring some
interesting. And so, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say you're bringing some interesting points. I can't really dispute anything you're saying because, as you suggested, you know the proof is in the pudding. But I would also say that at least this year, to this extent, he's firing guns with blanks. So well, you know until you're able to actually give him some bullets that he can attack with, it's not entirely a fair conversation or argument to be having.
He comes back. I agree. When now, Gronk comes back, it'll give him an extra weapon in down near the goal line, which he doesn't have right now.
Right, but I would also tell
you, acknowledge that.
Al, let me also tell you here, though, that if something, you know, heaven forbid, happened to either Tom or what's our backup quarterback's name again?
Ryan Mallett.
Oh, yeah, Ryan Mallett. I did that on purpose, okay. If something happened, exactly my point, thank you. If something were to happen to either one of those, Tebow would be back in a heartbeat.
Well, he probably
in a heartbeat.
He's available.
And the reason is because, well, yeah, I think we all know that. But the reason is because they like him. They know that he'll bust his tail to try to do, whether he gets there or not is a different story, but to try to do what, you know, Josh and Bill want him to do. And then, in that instance, maybe some of the other stuff gets revisited because once somebody gets healthy and there's an expendable body that has to go, now what do you do? So I can see that would be a back way in.
On a 53-man roster, John, why you couldn't find room for Tim Tebow. I don't understand that.
Because he wants a chance to play quarterback. So it's a mutual thing here. You know,
if you tell Tim, look, the way you make this team is under this scenario.
And he doesn't want to do that. He's already said he doesn't want to do that. He wants to take his
shot. He doesn't
want
to be the goal line quarterback?
No. They don't have a role for him as goal line quarterback, Al.
Okay,
I think, well, you know, well, you and I may like your idea. The coaching staff doesn't like it.
Well, I think they're wrong then.
Okay. You certainly have your right to say that. But all I'm saying is that I'm sure that's part of the discussion here. They're not even looking at it like that. And the reason they don't even look at it like that is because they have Tom Brady at quarterback.
Let me give you, John, let me throw something. This is, you're going to like this, John.
Okay.
Because we're about the same age, and we remember the same people and all this stuff. You remember Condredge Holloway, don't you?
Of course I do.
There you go. Condredge, you are a great American, John Rook. Condredge Holloway.
Good quarterback for Tennessee.
For Tennessee. There you go. Now, here's what a lot of people forget, and I totally forgot it until I saw the ESPN sort of SEC special on Condredge Holloway, produced by Kenny Chesney. It was an extremely well-done piece on him. And what I'd forgotten was that Condredge Holloway actually got drafted in the NFL in the 12th round by none other than yours and my New England Patriots at the time.
I think they had
12 rounds back in the day.
Right.
And he was taken in the 12th round. Now, according to Holloway, now this is the Chuck Fairbanks, when Chuck Fairbanks did everything that Belichick does now. Mm-hmm. This is the Chuck Fairbanks era. He did the drafting and the coaching, and he did everything like Belichick does.
Right.
All right. Now, according to Holloway, this could be, you know, you need another source maybe. But according to Holloway, he said that the Fairbanks came to him and said, Condredge, we love what you do. We love everything about you. We want you on the team. But You know, we can't say that you're going to be any kind of a full-time quarterback, even a backup full-time quarterback. You know, you're going to be play. We'll put you a little bit of defensive back. We'll put you in return punts. And the big thing we want you to do is to be our goal line quarterback. First and goal inside the 10, Condridge, it's all yours. Now, at that point in Condridge's career, he still, you know, he was like Tebow. He wanted to, he had other goals and, you know, so he went to Canada. And it may be that Tebow, you know, would go to Canada eventually where he might be where he'll end up. That's where Doug Flutie went, you know, some of them go there, okay? But what I'm saying is the whole idea of the specialist quarterback inside the 10, it's not like it's a new concept or some radical idea that came out of left field. It's been thought about before. It's been thought about by the New England Patriots before, mm-hmm. with a different guy, 30 years ago,
mm-hmm.
40 years ago almost. So it isn't like this is some foreign concept. Everything in football has basically been tried before or thought of before. And so I think it would be a great idea now with Tebow. And again, maybe there's atmospherics and money and agents and things that prevent all that from happening. But it just seems to me on a 53-man roster, you can find room for a guy who's a specialist. There are so many specialists in football.
Well, but
that would be a specialist that we would really need that help on this team with our current quarterback.
All right, Al. You've made your case, and I certainly understand it. I get your point of view, but I would argue just the opposite, because 53-man rosters are not made for specialists. 53-man rosters are made for what the Patriots have done for the last several years. They're made for guys who can play multiple spots. Tim Tebow does not want to do that. End okay. of the discussion.
All right. All right. If that's, I mean, I've never spoken to the young man, and evidently you have. So if he doesn't want to do any of these specialist type of things, then I'm afraid we can't use him.
Yeah, right. Am I wrong?
Yeah, well, hold on a second, Al. We didn't talk to Tebow after he was released, but what Tebow did do was send out multiple tweets
mm-hmm.
about
right.
being released. And you have to read between the lines from what he said.
Well, because, I mean, don't you think he's going to say some things that sort of, you know, are public relations? Or, I mean, can you take really literally everything a kid says after he gets cut?
I didn't say literally. I didn't say literally. I said read between the lines.
All right, go for it.
That's different than literally.
All right.
And what he said was, my desire is to continue my quest to be an NFL quarterback. Reading between the lines, that says, I'm not playing any other position for you.
Mm-hmm.
To hell with you.
Well,
I'm only playing quarterback or I'm not playing at all. That's what he said, basically.
Powerball next week. I mean, I'd be willing to settle for the Mega Millions instead.
Yes, he's not. He's clearly not willing to do that. And as John said, you win a roster spot here by being able to do many things. And if you're not willing to do many things and can't do the one thing you do as well as you're expected to,
you can't get a job.
Spot.
There's no job.
All right. Well, if he's not willing to compromise and be a specialist, then okay. I'm just saying, look, as a fan with a satellite dish, looking at the Patriots and looking at what our problems are, first and goal inside the 10, if we could ever turn his head around on that, I think that would help the team, because that's a glaring need. And it showed up on, you know, Thursday night when we had a first and goal inside the 10.
Understood.
And we couldn't get it in the
end zone. Understood. But it's just, we can't, there's no use in going there anymore. It's an issue that's over. There's 53 guys on the roster, Al, but there's only 45 guys on the roster on game day.
Well, then none of us should complain about the fact that we leave points on the field or turn the ball over like we did the first week in Buffalo down near the goal line. We shouldn't complain about any of that stuff inside the 10-yard line.
Why? Because Tim Tebow. Why? Because Tim Tebow could fix it.
Tebow stiffed us.
I'm not even so much concerned about the inside the 10. I'm more concerned about getting to the 10, which they're not able to.
They're not able
to do that on a consistent basis.
Right.
We're able to get to inside the 10 so easy. It's like
No, they're not.
What team are you watching?
You're not watching the games. Ryan Allen is second
inside the 10-yard line a lot. We have more chip shots than BJ Singh.
Al.
Okay.
Al, stop talking and listen. Ryan Allen has booted the second most number of punts in the NFL this year.
Well,
that means they're not getting inside the 10. Wake up.
Mm-hmm. They're not.
Okay. Wake up and watch the games.
You're referring to historical references that have nothing to do with this year, Al. Nothing. Well, zero.
Maybe you're right. I should realize that we're not getting inside the 10 with the frequency that we used to.
We're not getting inside the 10 at all. We're not getting inside the 10 at all.
Well, I don't know about at all. That's a little extreme, John. We're getting inside the 10.
Relatively speaking, at all. Compared to where we've been the last few years, at all.
Okay. We're not getting in as much as we used to. I understand.
Okay.
But once we get in, the same problems happen when we used to get in frequently, which is...
Well, but that's a whole other... Al, hold on. Okay.
Go for it. Okay.
We're beating a dead horse, and it's starting to make me ill. So we don't need to do this anymore because this is a problem
that we don't
even need to get to right now because this team has other problems. And Tim Tebow is
so thick.
No,
unbelievable.
Well, no, we liked him.
The guys just threw up as soon as I mentioned his name, and I really feel bad about it.
Well, because there is a time.
Healthy as a horse.
There is a time. Al, please, you got to stop talking. There is a time when you have to move on, and this is now the time. We have to move on from Tim Tebow. He's not on the team. He's not going to be on the team.
The problems this team has are way beyond what he can bring.
Exactly. There are problems on the offensive line.
It's a different stratosphere.
There are problems on defense.
Well, that would appear to magnify that every time you do get inside the 10-yard line, you're going to want to...
All right. I can't do that anymore. Yeah, I'm sorry. Al, I love you. I love you. You're a great caller. You're a superb fan.
Oof.
But you are absolutely... I mean, talk about this. If anybody wants to know what...
Is he related to Tebow?
I don't know. He must be. But if anybody really wants to know literally what beating a dead horse is, this is it. I can't bang my head against the wall anymore.
I know.
I didn't even have the heart to hang up on him. I put him on hold so he'd listen to me. Okay? That's the only thing, Al. I understand that you think Tim is a great player for first and goal inside the 10.
Yeah,
that's wonderful. We understand that. And frankly, I don't even disagree with you. But that's not what this team needs right now. This team has got so many more problems. And frankly, like the Patriots, like the coaching staff, I'm willing to roll the dice with Tom Brady right now inside the 10. Why? Because he's still going to go down as one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game. Mm. So, you know, if you're telling me...
And when Gronk is back and healthy, Brady to Gronk is virtually unstoppable inside the 10.
Inside the 10, that's... Yeah, well, and even if you do manage to stop it, think of the other lanes that open up for other players.
Yeah.
I mean, this is where not having Gronk, obviously we talked about earlier, not having Hernandez, not having a guy like Shane Vereen to carry to grab it out of the backfield, which I think we see he can do, and he can do at a very high level. I mean, welcome back, Kevin Faulk. That's kind of how I look at Shane Vereen. It's unfortunate that he got hurt, but he's that kind of player. It opens up lanes for the running backs too, you know, to actually carry the ball. Far be it from us to actually run the ball inside the 10.
I know. Yeah. If there are struggles to be had, fault to be assigned inside the 10, part of it has to go to the play calling.
Of course.
Yes?
Of course. There has to be an equal amount of blame here. There's enough of the blame pie to go around. And yet, as we started the whole program today, this team is 2-0. And as I've had a couple of texters, emailers, if you will, and Facebook posters say, let's see, what did Michael say? You are what your record says you are. I believe we've heard that quote before, too.
To an extent, yeah. I mean, as far as, you know.
You managed to make enough plays to beat the two teams on your schedule to be 2-0.
Right.
You don't need to worry about style
points. That
doesn't
mean you're perfect.
No, you don't have to worry about style points. Did you win the game? Yes. Move on.
Right.
That's how this team looks at it. That's how this organization looks at it. They're 2-0.
Right.
They're not 0-2. Now, if we're 0-2, all comers are welcome, and all things are on the table, and nothing is off the table. But the fact is, they made enough plays. What kind of plays did they make? Well, the defense certainly stood up, and we talked about that extensively yesterday. The defense has stood up and kept the offense in the game, where the last couple of years it's been exactly the opposite.
Yep.
We've been crying for a defense to return to New England. Now that we have one, all we're worried about is, oh, my God, the offense sucks. How about, okay, sure, the offense has its problems. A lot of them are predicated on injuries, which you can't really do anything about. You have to learn to survive. You advance and survive. It's like playing the NCAA tournament. Survive and advance. That's all you do. Week to week. Game to game. target the next one, game plan for the next one, go try to win the next one. If you don't, pick it up, turn the page, move on, because there's another one waiting for you. So that's all you're doing here. Survive in advance. And in the meantime, until you can get pieces of your puzzle back, until guys can get healthy, or until guys can learn the playbook, or whatever it may end up being, and we know that there are problems on both ends offensively right now, the defense has to do more than its fair share. And considering the offense has done that each of the last 2 years, we should be focusing on the defense and the fact that they're actually doing what we're asking them to do. Eric, during the off season, when you guys only go on the air once or twice a week,
twice a week, right?
On PFW in Progress, the majority had to still be prior to the draft talking about improving the defense. Had to be,
yeah, adding receivers,
but improving defensively.
Yeah, our consensus was we needed an edge rusher.
Yeah,
probably a corner, a defensive back.
Right.
We'll say
okay,
and a wide receiver.
Right.
Those are the priorities.
Okay. And so, you know, that's where the focus has been. That's what they've tried to do. And then all of a sudden, everybody's world was torn apart by Aaron Hernandez. And so that's going to undercut even the best, most prescient minds that are out there.
But that was post-draft, too. Don't forget.
That's true.
So they made all their decisions.
When you draft, you're drafting based on you think you've got everybody in tow.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so now, when that blows up, oh my goodness, now what do we do? Well, now you're talking about, you know, they probably don't make some of the same decisions that they made on draft day had they known this was going to happen. And for anybody to say that, well, they should have known, no, that's bull and you know it. There's no way anybody, I don't care how much homework you do on a guy and his background and what have you, there's just no way you can know that somebody is capable of something like that. There's just no way. And if you say anything else, You're just being a contrarian. That's it. That's all there is to it. Nobody knew. You know, you can certainly get an indication of what kind of a person they may be by looking at their background. But honestly, some people are victims of circumstance. I mean, if you have a little spot on your record somewhere, maybe it's a transgression that you suffered, say back as, oh, I don't know, a 19-year-old college sophomore. And you did something kind of stupid that you really...
Are you speaking from experience?
No. You can go look that up. I'm clean, baby. But all I'm saying is that, you know, it's not... You're not now who you were then.
Oh, no. Not even close.
I mean, the other argument I was going to bring up today, and we're just about out of time here in the opening hour, but Gary Washburn, he needs to, you know, he writes for the Boston Globe. He's covered the NBA for a long time for the Globe, primarily, although he's done some football in the past. But he wrote a piece today in the Boston Globe, if nobody saw it, about how the Patriots should give Terrell Owens a look. Ugh. And I wanted to vomit. I really did. It's kind of like, Al, it's kind of like the whole Tebow thing you just brought up. Do we really need to go here again?
No.
The answer to that is no. Now, I understand he's probably writing this because he probably feels like there's, you know, a legitimate story here. And plus, sometimes, you know, to sell papers, people like contrarians. Okay? Mm. That's okay.
Well, and then there are the owls of the world who want those kind of outrageous moves to take place.
But if it's not going to make you better, then why? I'm trying to explain why it's not going to make you better. Now, honestly, if one of the rookies got hurt, if one of these rookies somehow got hurt, you know, and maybe had to go on IR or whatever, all right, guess what? Maybe it's time to do something like that because now you're at the stage where you need bodies, not just players. Not just people who can make plays, you need bodies. Maybe then you have to take a look at something like that. I'm not saying T.O., period, but maybe you take a look at bringing in the quote-unquote street free agent who I railed against yesterday on this very show as saying that was stupid. Why? Because you're taking reps away from the guys who need the reps for the learning curve. And so that's why the whole argument of bringing in T.O. is kind of like, well, that's just stupid. He's had his chance. He's had two chances, really, with the quote-unquote new TO, and he hasn't been able to contribute.
And he has no experience with this offense or this quarterback, which
any faster than Chad Ochocinco / Johnson?
Yeah.
What makes you think he's going to do that? Zero. I got zero reason to think he's going to do that. Zero. Like I said, that happens if rookie receivers start dropping like flies and cannot return to the squad. That's the only time that something even remotely similar happens.
Desperate times call for desperate measures. Right. Desperate measures would only be taken in desperate times.
We're not in desperate times. All we're saying here is you got to let this play out. We're through 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Let's let these guys, you know, try to earn their keep. You know, let's get to week 6, 7, 8, 9 before we really say, okay, this guy can't play.
Yeah.
I mean, didn't we give Bethel Johnson 2 years? Didn't we give him two years?
Yeah, I think it was at least two.
Okay.
Maybe.
I think we gave the guy 2 years, and you're willing to give Aaron Dobson 2 weeks? Come on. Yeah. Come on.
Most receivers, it takes at least in this league a year for them to get on board. It's rare that you get a receiver who makes an impact as a rookie.
Right. And this is exactly
and
why
we're expecting three of them to do that.
It's exactly why Tom Brady has been saying, you know, hey, we kind of knew that this was going to happen. We just need to be patient, and I need to do things a different way, and yada yada, because this is going to be like, you know, an on the field classroom.
Mm-hmm.
It's an on the field classroom for the New England Patriots. All right, we're going to jump into that a little bit more here in the next few minutes. Doug Kiatt again from Nesson.com, who covers the Patriots. He's going to join us in hour number two as we begin to wrap up hour number one. But we do have other matters that we do need to attend to as Eric Scalavino ends his normal appearance.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
All right, John, yesterday I gave you recrudesce.
Yes.
You remember, right?
Yeah,
I have a similar sounding word today.
Decrudesce.
No? No? But it ends with that.
Oh.
Deliquesce.
Deliquesce.
Yes.
Deliquesce?
Yes, it's a verb. D-E-L-I-Q-U-E-S-C-E. Deliquesce.
Deliquesce.
Any guesses as to what that might mean?
It's a verb?
It's a verb.
Deliquesce. So if you're going to deliquesce something?
Something deliquesces.
Something deliquesces? Mm. You know what? I think you've actually stumped me on this one.
Okay.
Because I'm usually pretty good at picking apart the roots of words, and I think you got me on this one.
It means to dissolve, to fade away, to melt.
Okay.
Basically.
To melt.
Yeah.
Like Big Al from Valdosta, Georgia, should deliquesce into the...
Yeah, I think his mind may have deliquesced.
I like that.
Lately.
Okay, I like that. That works.
So there's your word for the day, deliquesce.
Deliquesce?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Robin? Has he used that one before?
I certainly have not.
By the way, a couple of people have Facebooked here and they said, hey, what happens if Robin's right and we find that he has used another word? Does she win a prize?
Yeah. She'll get a media guide.
Oh, I love it. And Big Matt even said that. Just called out Robin, John. I think those are fighting words.
No.
Absolutely.
And one real quick shout out to our old friend Brian Hoyer, who's going to make his first NFL start this weekend for the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
At Minnesota, or against Minnesota. I don't know where that game is. But a guy from the Cleveland area grew up in, I think it was Shaker Heights, maybe?
Shaker Heights sounds right. Yeah, that sounds right.
Grew up a Browns fan. Now he's going to be their starting quarterback, at least for this week.
Well, good for him. Good for him. How bad did Whedon get hurt last week?
Badly enough that I think he's out for an extended while. Or I don't know how long, but, you know, hey, if Hoyer plays well, who knows? Maybe he has an opportunity here.
Well, but you have to make your most of these the most of these opportunities, because you never know when they're going to come along.
So good for him.
I believe that's what young Mr. Tom Brady did when Drew Bledsoe got nailed by Mo Lewis years ago, right?
Sure did.
Pretty much. That's how he entered the NFL. So, all right, Big E. So tomorrow, prediction Thursday, and
make predictions tomorrow.
Yeah, make predictions on the game. I had a couple of tweets yesterday about guys, pick the game.
Oh, that's Thursday.
And I'm like, that's Thursday. We can't jump ahead.
Yeah,
we have to dissect and analyze
one day
first.
At a time.
Yeah, one day at a time. So you can't put the cart before the horse. How many other cliches can we use here? You know. Oh well. All right. Thanks, Big E.
No problem. See you tomorrow.
All right. We're going to continue the thought process. We're going to take your emails. I haven't taken any emails yet, so keep the cards and letters coming. 508-298-0398 on the phone, the Ace Ticket Hotline, or the toll-free line, 855-PATS-500. No, Big Al did not destroy the phone line. I did not hammer it into a million pieces, even though I'm sure that there are many of you that wanted to do that. And we love Big Al, okay? I let him go long like he went because, frankly, sometimes you need to stir the pot a little bit. I wanted him to get his point across because one of the things that we try to do on this show, no matter the absolute sheer lunacy of an opinion, everybody gets a chance to have a voice here. All opinions are welcome, no matter how stupid we think they are. How's that for a backhanded compliment? Eric's laughing on his way out the door. Now, I don't think anybody's opinion is stupid. Opinions are like, you know, yeah, everybody's got one. You know exactly what I was going to say. All right. So like belly buttons, right? Everybody has one of those. So generally everybody has an opinion, right? Belly button. Yeah. Navels. Would you rather me say navel, Kevin? I never thought of that as a navel. That's a belly button, damn it.
Only if it's an Audi.
Only if it's an Audi, no.
An innie can't really be a button.
It's just a hole. It's
more of a hole.
It's just a hole. I know. I have an innie. So I don't.
I have an innie. I always thought Audis were weird looking.
I always thought Audis were weird looking. I'm sorry.
That's what I'm saying. Audis, when they just kind of bulge out. I have an innie, so I always thought everyone else wearing an Audi was strange.
This has just gone way too far now in this program.
But it is more of a button than an innie.
I suppose that's true. All right, so there you go. At JR Broadcaster, the Twitter address, Twitter handle, John.Rook on Facebook. Questions, comments, criticisms, lynchings of Big Al coming up.
You know that celebration dance? The I just got a heck of a deal on awesome entertainment, so let's dance? You probably haven't done it in a while, so here's a reason to. Now until September 3rd, when you sign up for 100% fiber optic Verizon Fios, you can take your entertainment to the next level with America's fastest, most reliable internet. Switch to a Fios Triple Play Online for just $79.99 a month for 12 months and get your choice of a $300 Amazon.com gift card or a $300 Visa prepaid card with a 2-year agreement. Plus, get a high-speed wireless router at no additional charge. You won't get that with cable. And that's an entertainment deal worth dancing about. So hurry. This great summer deal ends September 3rd. Visit gottogetfios.com and upgrade today. Technology that makes life more entertaining. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by MetaBank, member FDIC. Amazon.com is not a sponsor of this promotion. Restrictions apply. Fios available in select areas. Offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a 2-year agreement and ends 9/3/13. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply. Visit Verizon.com/Amazon for details.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only 4-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
With power comes responsibility, and NRG has taken that responsibility to new heights by evolving the way sustainable energy is discussed and used in the 21st century. With 3,000 state-of-the-art solar panels installed at Patriot Place, we've transformed the open-air retail complex next to Gillette Stadium into a visually stunning, self-sustaining destination that generates 60% of its own power. NRG is proud to be the official energy provider for Patriot Place, Gillette Stadium, and the New England Revolution.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder wait list and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
The word off-season doesn't exist in the NFL. Maybe for hot dog vendors and groundskeepers, but not for teams or players or fans. When the goal every year is winning it all, the road begins to be paved in February. Because there are holes that need to be filled, weights that need to be lifted, and next levels that need to be reached. Keep up with your favorite team with coverage of NFL Network 24/7 on NFL Mobile. Always having your passions with you? That's powerful. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile from Verizon. Airtime and messaging rates may apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Available on select smartphones. Don't call or text while driving.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
Thanks, Nelly. John Rook, hour number two, Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio. All right, just for further proof that, Al, you are a bleep-stirrer, here we go. This just came in on Facebook from Michael, who says, Tebow is not worth the roster spot. If he did take another position, then he takes away from a better player at that position, such as Hooman. Is he really better than Mulligan at tight end? Is he really better than Vereen? Tebow still can't throw. 53 guys on the roster, yes, but 45 active ones on game day. When you asked for star players at the beginning of the season, did anyone suggest Ryan Allen or Steven Gostkowski? Yep. But then Michael says, Al is knowledgeable. You know what, Al? There is no questioning your knowledge. Maybe you need a hug. Mary on Facebook says, John, I'm listening. Al needs a hug. Needs to hug a couple co-eds. Maybe. Maybe. Twitter. Derek says, I'm disappointed. You let Al stay on for so long. Ridiculous. The guy is out of his mind. Whew. Okay. David says,
crazy.
Yeah. Best believe that I was all for Tim Tebow, but he just didn't work for our team, so it's pointless to even discuss it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And then Michael says, the man is clueless. Tebow better than Brady? He doesn't work in the NFL. Stop the T-mania. Okay. We're all piling on Al now, so thank you, Al, for that. I appreciate that. But let me also suggest to you that at least there were some solutions. Sven, who's one of our new listeners here, says, don't let people, and he puts a word in parentheses that I'm really not going to call Al, but he says, who can't take in new basic facts, keep talking for so long, please. Well, as I suggested, Sven, in Sweden, everybody here has a right to get their opinion across. You know, but the thing is that we have to have a give and take of ideas and suggestions. We have to have a conversation because that's what talk radio is. It's having a conversation. It's not just getting your point across, getting your take across and, you know, damn everybody else. No, it's a conversation. So if you want to have a conversation about it, by all means. I'll listen to whatever, you know, harebrain, lame brain thing you got to say. And I'll probably do you the courtesy of listening all the way through until we keep beating the dead horse over and over and over again. And then my head starts to hurt, and then we got to move on. So that's what we'll try to do. Bill in New York in the playbook. Bill, how are you?
Pretty good. How you doing today?
I'm okay, Bill. What's on your mind?
Let's have everyone calm down. This is week two.
Yes.
How many teams can claim that they have two divisional wins right now?
Correct.
I mean, you know, yes, we're going to have bumps in the road. It's a whole new format. I'm as anxious as anybody, but this is the Patriots, and year after year, they come through when it's time to come through. So let's just, I just can't resolve it enough. I sit here in the middle of Jets and Giants territory, and these guys can't wait for me to show up so they can get on me about what happened during the game. And I look at them, my straight statement. I don't know. We're two divisional wins. What other team has that right now?
Mm-hmm. I believe the Patriots are one of two teams that have that.
Yep.
So
I think that's right.
Yeah.
So give these guys a little time. And that's on top of the big thing for me right now is these guys went a four-day period in between games. They've had 10. So let's see what happens this week, and you know, then maybe we can start to do some more fair assessments for them.
Yeah, I think it's tough in any stage to assess somebody after, or assess a finished product after just 2 weeks. I mean, the paint isn't dry on the new hot rod, you know? You've got to be able to let this thing play itself through, and admitted there are problems, and everybody knows there are problems, but I think everybody's got a quick fix solution to the problem so the Patriots offense can get back to being the Patriots offense that we're used to seeing. And I would tell you that the best way back here is to get Gronkowski and Amendola healthy. You get those two guys on the field together, and then let's not forget Shane Vereen in the mix, because he certainly has proven to be, if not back 1A, then 1B. Let's put it to you that way. He's certainly good enough to do what he did in the opener and probably save the Patriots bacon against a Buffalo from that regard before he broke his wrist. So, you know, you've got three very important pieces of the puzzle there. And then what we opened up with, you know, the program today to talk about is this is all a trickle-down effect and tied into not having Aaron Hernandez in your plans this year. And so now you've had to retool the whole ball of wax. You've basically had to throw things out the window and try to decide to do new and different things, and you got to put people in positions that you just didn't think you were going to have to do. But now you do. And so invariably you're going to struggle until that learning curve begins to catch on. And the only way that the learning curve begins to catch on is by keeping those guys right where they are. You can't take playing time away from these guys.
They're not going to get where they need to be if we put other people in there taking their time away from them on the field.
You are 110% correct. 110% correct. There's just no other way to phrase it, Bill. You can't do it, right?
Exactly. That's exactly so. Let's see where we are, you know. Let's see where we are in 4 or 5 weeks when we start running into the really good teams and the good. But then our defense has had weeks on the field together because this is what it's all about. The pace is a step. You know, the pace steps up from training camp. Everybody starts to get in the. They start. You know, the timing's going to start falling in place, but it doesn't happen on week one or two. So,
right.
And I think I think we've just been such a spoiled fan base that we have a hard time, you know, having the patience that other, you know, there's other fans that don't even see the light that we've seen.
Well, there's no doubt about that. But and that is one of our big problems here, that we've built up too much expectation here. So I think you have to realize that, you know, hey, all right, so the expectations are falling short of what everybody thought. Team is still 2-0. And, oh, by the way, didn't you notice the defense has actually stepped up and done pretty well? And if we get this kind of consistent defensive play throughout the course of the year, you know, barring injuries, knock on wood, then this team should be right where it wants to be in December. And that's contending.
Well, what has everyone said we've missed in the Super Bowls? Our defense. So if the defense is developing and coming along the way they are, we now have that last piece of the puzzle.
Of course. Of course, of course. That's the hidden gem in all this. We're too fixated on the flash and the dash, and we're not fixated enough on the substance. But the substance is pretty good. Substance is pretty good stuff right now if you really take a look at it.
Yep, yep. And it's okay to have a schedule where you can work your guys in the way that they've been going.
Of course, of course.
Let's just have everyone calm down. Let's take a look for a couple weeks and, let's look for the next Super Bowl.
I'm there with you.
I don't think things are so dire that people have to be, you know, too upset yet.
No, I'm there with you. And, Bill, thank you for the phone call. Appreciate your time today. I would say, though, that, you know, you do need to recognize that maybe some missteps were taken. You know, you have to at least allow for that. But it's not as dire as you put, Bill. It's not as dire, I think, as people, you know, might make it out to be. There were some missteps that were taken, but there are a lot of things that are wrong with this team that are perceived to be wrong that really aren't wrong, and that's kind of what I'm going to get into here in just a couple of moments. By the way, Sven in Sweden, I cannot say Sven in Sweden, I have to say Sven in Sweden, because it just kind of rolls off the tongue better. Let's pretend Al is right. Brady sucks from first and goal within the 10 yards. We pretend Brady only scores 10% of the time he's in that situation. Then the solution is pretty simple. Last year, the Patriots had the highest touchdown percentage in the red zone ever, if I'm not mistaken. It was pretty close. Every time they happen to get the ball inside the 10 and not score, they just committed a dead ball foul and get a 15-yard penalty. Then they have first and 10 in the red zone instead of first and goal within the 10. Don't you think the Patriots would have figured this out already if what Al is saying is correct? In other words, okay, so he's not good inside the 10. Let's back his ass up. that's all good. That's all good. I like it. Let's just back him up. 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 All right, as I mentioned, one of the things that I didn't want to talk about today, it was a little bit of the discussion yesterday. We didn't really get to delve into it a ton, and I wanted to spend some time today. I think that, you know, there are some misconceptions about what is right and what is wrong with this New England team at this stage of the game. And just so happens that the Patriots beat writer on Nesson.com, Doug Kide, actually got into that yesterday with a piece that he put on Nesson.com, and Doug joined us now here on the program. Hey, Doug, it's great to visit with you. Thanks for taking the time today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to be on with you, John.
All right, so let's go to the article that you wrote yesterday to begin with. How did this idea really kind of first come into your mindset as you were looking at this team? What made you come up with the five misconceptions that you came up with?
There's always, you know, the Facebook comments and tweets that I get. And I feel like those five things I mentioned are really ones that just keep popping up. People say that Belichick can't draft. People say that the Patriots need to bring in a veteran receiver. These are just really misconceptions that just keep popping up and keep popping into my timeline. And I keep reading, and basically I kind of got sick of reading them, and now I have a link to send everyone who will ever ask me about any of these ever again.
Yeah, just here, read this. You'll be educated, right? Yeah, I get it. Well, you know, I think it's pretty clear to see that, you know, fans are going to be fans, and fans only look at the surface. And it's up to reporters and guys who cover the team on a daily basis to sort of unearth the truths that do come out from time to time over the course of a year. And now, obviously, those truths are going to be a lot more difficult to come by in New England just because of the nature of the beast around here. Everything is played very, very closely to the vest. But there are some ways, I think, that some reporters and some observers of the team, especially a lot of us who have been around for a number of years, that have learned, as Eric brought up in the opening hour, they have learned to kind of read between the lines on some things because they know they can't say what they really want to because then they can suffer consequences for it. So taking that into consideration, nobody's going to directly address any quote-unquote misconceptions about the Patriots that they may have, but they will acknowledge that there are some problems. So that kind of sets the table for where we are with this team. The biggest issue that's been out there, of course, has to be with the rookie receivers either not knowing where to be or dropping whatever they get. And that there was a need to go out and sign a veteran receiver somehow, some way, in order to take some of the burden off of Tom Brady so he could have somebody to throw the ball. Now, my argument for a day and a half now has been no, 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 and guess what? No! That's not what you need to do, because the rookies need time in order to be able to, you know, grow, to learn on the job. In your estimation, is there anybody even worth a conversation about right now in the free agent marketplace that you might go, hmm?
No, not really. I mean, I know the names that everyone brings up. Everyone brings up Deion Branch. Everyone brings up Randy Moss, because those guys have actually been here before. I know that T.O. was talked about today, but I really feel that all three of those are pretty ridiculous. I mean, Moss didn't look that great last year in San Francisco. Plus, there was a reason why he left in the first place. Deion Branch looked, you know, really slowed down in 2011 and 2012. Terrell Owens hasn't been in the NFL since 2010, so I think we can completely remove his name from any discussion whatsoever. The one name who is, I guess, kind of interesting a little bit is just Kenny Britt, just because he doesn't seem very happy in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. He had some comments yesterday about how this is going to be his last year with the Titans. If he somehow became available and he was available for a very cheap price, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibilities for the Patriots to think about acquiring him. But I'm really trying to say that that's probably not going to happen. So, no, I'm with you. I think those rookie wide receivers need time in the offense, and they're not going to step up unless they're given those opportunities. And you can give them all the opportunities that you want in practices and even thought during the preseason, but that's not in the full offense. They have to see what they have in those guys, and they have to get those guys prepared, because they're going to need them late in the season, regardless of any injuries, regardless of who's back, who's not back. So, no, I think that absolutely the way to go with this team right now is just get those rookies ready now. This team will be better in the future anyway, so they won't have to rely on them as heavily, but get them those reps now. Get them those snaps now. Absolutely.
Doug Kide covers the Patriots for Nesson.com, and he joined us here on Patriots Playbook. All right, so another misconception that's one of my favorites that I've actually gotten a lot. I got a lot from in the offseason was that Kyle Arrington is just horrible. What are they thinking? That guy can't play. And yet he's actually had a pretty good start to the year. And this is one of the great untold stories, as I've kind of opined about over the last couple of days, or day and a half anyway here, Doug, is the fact that, you know, hey, everybody's focused on the fact that the offense is sputtering right now, but how about the defense? We're crying about no defense in the offseason, and now there's a defense. And this defense has actually carried this team to two wins to start the year, when this could easily be an 0-2 team. And Kyle Arrington has had as good a season as anybody on that side of the ball. So why do people still think Kyle Arrington is bad? Are they just not paying attention?
I think they're not paying attention. And I really think that part of it is just that no one really knows how difficult it really is to play cornerback in the NFL. And people just remember the times in 2011, 2012, when he'd get beat deep. But, yeah, some of that might have been his fault for not turning around on the ball or whatever it is, but he also didn't have a safety back there to protect him at all. And now that he's got Devin McCourty back deep, Steve Gregory helping in the middle of the field, he's doing a much better job. And he's a much better slot cornerback than he is an outside cornerback. In my opinion, he's one of the best slot cornerbacks in the NFL. It's amazing how he tracks guys in the middle of the field. And he doesn't have that sideline to protect him at all. He's great in the run game. He makes plays. Obviously, we saw it in week one where he forced two fumbles. I mean, he really has been a key part of this defense. And like you said, the defense really has stepped up for the Patriots. And this is something that we're not even really used to seeing. I know it's two rookie quarterbacks. People will comment on all that. But they've made key stops. They've given the ball back to the Patriots in time to make these comebacks. And these aren't the kind of things that we're really used to seeing over the last couple of years with this team. And I think they've done a really good job. And like I said, I mean, Arrington's been a very big part of that. He's only allowed 3 receptions on the season. So I don't think that even his biggest detractors at this point could really have any negative things to say about him.
It would be pretty tough to, concern the kind of start to the season that he's gotten out to. Now, saying that he's a slot corner, obviously here's another way of putting it. He, you know, would be a good, he'd be a really good nickelback, if you would. And I'm not talking about the rock group either. Really bad rock group too, by the way. Yeah. But, you know, the idea that he can come in and help out and be an extra player you know, that can have an impact is you know, obviously that's his role. He's been able to find a role for himself, carve it out very well. Can he, in your estimation, based on what you've seen and you know, who you've talked to and everything, is it possible he could be an every day and every down cornerback in the NFL, or is that just not his fit?
At this point, I mean, opposing teams are going to run so many three receiver sets anyway that he really has been an every down player so far.
That's a good point. Yep.
I think he can be. Yeah, I mean, I think he can play the corner, the outside. He's not only limited to the slot. I think that this team is best when they do have Tlaib and Dennard on the sidelines and then Arrington in the slot. But you know, if either one of those players went down, or if they face a team that really has, you know, the two receiver, two tight ends, or two receiver, two running back, those type of sets, then yeah, I think he can definitely play on the outside. And he's a guy who you do want on the field. He makes plays. He's a really solid tackler, especially for his size. And, yeah, I mean, he's definitely a guy that you want on the field, and he's a guy that I think is going to be pretty much an every-down player in this defense.
All right. A lot of the other issues have to do with drafting or, you know, the inability to draft, I guess. You know, Belichick can't draft, or the Patriots always trade out of the first round. Two huge, obviously, misconceptions right there. And then the one that I've really liked of late, why don't they trade Ryan Mallett, you know, because he's not ever going to play. And then, you know, I think it kind of ties in with what we were arguing about ad nauseum with a caller earlier today, Doug, you know, over, you know, Tim Tebow's, you know, presence or lack thereof now, you know, on the roster. Fact of the matter is that, you know, if there were that much of a market for Ryan Mallett, then the Patriots, you know, would have made the deal already. I'm not convinced that there's that much of a market for backup quarterbacks right now anyway in the NFL. That doesn't mean that there won't be if we all of a sudden get a spate of injuries running here. I just don't, you know, anybody that thinks that you can get something like that, you know, like a first-round pick for him, I think is obviously really needs to examine things a little bit more carefully. And then, of course, the whole, you know, trading issue or drafting issue. Yeah, there have been some notable failures in the second and third round, but there have also been some on the other side as well that somehow those names get kind of put by the side. So I don't know that that's entirely an accurate statement to make and probably a pretty good misconception of where this team is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most of this team is really built off either draft or undrafted players. So to say that Belichick can't draft it really is kind of a misconception. I mean, most of the defense is those high-round picks, the McCourty first-rounder, Dante Hightower, Jerod Mayo, Chandler Jones. I mean, those are four major cogs in the defense, and they're all first-round picks. So I think it's very unfair to say that they can't draft. And, you know, going back to that Mallett thing a little bit even, a few years ago, everyone was saying, hey, why don't we trade Brian Hoyer for a second-round pick?
Yeah, right? I remember that.
Yeah, Brian Hoyer got released by the Patriots and didn't get picked up for 2 or 3 weeks. So, I mean, I think people kind of think that these backup quarterbacks playing behind Brady have more value than they really do. And like you said, I mean, if he had that kind of value, he probably would have been traded at this point.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. By the way, and you did a good job of listing first-round picks here. Let's go backwards. Hightower, Jones, Solder, McCourty, Mayo, Brandon Merriweather was a bust. Lawrence Maroney was a bust. But then after that, Mankins, Wilfork, Ty Warren, Daniel Graham, Richard Seymour. Not a bad track record, at least with high draft picks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously people are kind of focusing on, I guess, Maroney and Merriweather, but the rest of those guys, you can't really argue with Richard Seymour, Ty Warren, Vince Wilfork, and then all those recent guys have been pretty good as well. So, yeah, no, it's definitely a misconception there. And it's just the fact that they spend so many draft picks. If you're drafting more guys than any other team, then there's going to be misses in there as well. But there's just as many hits, and obviously something's working since this team has been to the playoffs almost every single year.
Sure, and I think one of the things that the Patriots have done very well, if you're going to say that they can't draft, and let's just assume for a moment that you say they can't draft, then one of the things you'd have to admit that they can do, and there's no misconception here, is they certainly can identify undrafted talent. Every year they bring in undrafted rookie free agents, and the big one that comes to mind right this second is Kimbrel Tompkins. They come in and they not only make the team, but end up having a significant role.
Oh, yeah, and even a guy like Joe Villano, I mean, he's the sub defensive tackle right now. His week two game was very good against the run. He was actually one of the best run defenders, in my opinion, on the Patriots defense in that game. And he was another guy like Kenbrell Thompson. He was brought in right away as an undrafted free agent. He got his reps during the summer, during the preseason. He made the team, and now he's got a pretty big role on this team. He's not a starter like Tompkins is, but both those guys definitely have a role on this team, and they're pretty valuable so far.
All right, Doug. So now that we've kind of taken some of the misconceptions and hopefully at least examined them under the microscope, what does this team have in a positive sense right now in 2 weeks that we're missing, that we may not be discussing much?
I'm sorry, what's missing from the team?
Yeah, in other words, is there a missing ingredient? Is there something that's going well with this team right now that really is not being paid much attention to? We talked in an overall sense about the defense, but is there a part of the defense? Is there a player? Is there someone that's sort of hidden right now that's getting overwhelmed or overshadowed by, you know, the troubles on offense?
I think I'd actually even say Steve Gregory's had a very good first 2 weeks of the season. He's a guy that, you know, he's someone else that Patriots fans kind of beat up on a little bit last year, but mm-hmm. he's been very good. I mean, he really limited Kellen Winslow in week two.
Yep.
Kellen Winslow became Geno Smith's, you know, safety blanket or security blanket in week one. He had 7 catches, 79 yards, and a touchdown. Gregory was usually the guy who was kind of keyed in on him on week two. He limited him to 3 catches for 16 yards. And that was almost all right there on Gregory. His tackling's really improved. It seems like that year in the defense has really kind of helped him a lot. And he's a guy who's going a little bit under the radar right now, and that's a big reason why the defense is doing so well, because really the Patriots have had a little bit of trouble guarding tight ends the last couple of years, and I guess it's been kind of ironic since they've had to go up against Gronkowski and Hernandez during the season. So you'd think that those are guys that they would really key in on, but
right.
As long as Gregory is doing a good job there against tight ends, it takes some pressure off the linebackers, might allow them to blitz a little bit more. So, yeah, I mean, that defense in general is doing great, but Gregory's been a really key aspect. And some of the other guys like Will Fork, Mayo, McCourty, who haven't had that big of games yet, but there's other guys like Gregory who are really stepping up. So I don't think this defense is not going to come down from this. I think they're going to be strong all year.
I think that's a pretty good selection right there. You know, I think Volano is one of those guys, and you talked about him earlier, that's sort of risen up into a role that no one really expected him to do, and he's had some significant time to play. So I would also suggest him as a possibility. Offensively, you know, Vereen had an unbelievable start and then had to hurt himself. I would kind of look right now at someone who could be significant if he can, you know, get the time, and I'm not sure why he isn't getting the time. But, you know, I was a little surprised that Leon Washington didn't get as much play as I thought he could have or even should have last week against the Jets. But there's another guy that, even though he's a veteran, but he's got the skill set that the Patriots need. Somebody who can catch the ball out of the backfield. Somebody that can give you a change of pace in the backfield. Somebody who can move the ball when they're struggling to just move the ball between the 20s. That's another guy that certainly could have some impact if he's given an opportunity.
Yeah, definitely, and in the kick return game as well. I mean,
well, that's the other big question. Yeah, why has he not been back there returning kicks?
I think that, you know, this is all conjecture, but I feel like he probably wasn't fully healthy for week two yet.
Right.
So maybe once that starts coming back, he gets to full health, he'll be that third down back. He'll be back returning kicks. We won't have to have LeGarrette Blount doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But another guy in there too is, once Brandon Bolden comes back, he might be a bigger part of the running game, bigger part of the passing game as well. He is a pretty good pass blocker. He can catch the ball in the backfield. He'll mix things up a little bit more. It seems like they really don't want to get Ridley too involved in the pass game yet. Maybe that's a wrinkle they want to throw in week three, week four, week five, when the schedule starts to ramp up a little bit more. But they definitely need someone who can catch the ball out of the backfield with Vereen out. And that's either going to be Washington, Bolden, or I guess Ridley if they think he's up to it.
Yeah, I think most everybody would be satisfied if Ridley would just learn to hold on to the ball when he carries it, much less receives it. And that's obviously a legitimate criticism at this stage of the game. All right, Doug, then, before we let you go, I'd love to get your thoughts on the matchup with Tampa Bay. for this next Sunday, because the Bucs are certainly not a quintessential 0-2 team. I've seen a couple of power rankings that have them down as low as like 30th out of the 32 teams, which I find that's laughable. Somebody is not doing the homework. You really have to look at this Bucs team and realize that there is talent on both sides of the ball. If you didn't see that in the preseason when the Patriots were scrimmaging against them, and I do think that the Patriots have some legitimate concerns as they go up against this team on Sunday.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, the big player on everyone's mind is Rivas, because the Patriots have faced him so many times. But if he's able to shut down Julian Edelman, if he's matched up against Julian Edelman, Tom Brady's going to have to find someone else to throw to, and that's going to be one of those rookies, or it's going to be a running back, or maybe Sudfeld if he's back, maybe a tight end. I think that Brady's, I said it before, security blanket and Julian Edelman could be taken away in this game, so that'll be a big key for me. Passing game on the other side of the ball, I don't think Josh Freeman's the best quarterback in the league or anything, but he's got some very good targets there. And Vincent Jackson has actually been the Buccaneers' slot receiver, oddly enough, when they go to three receiver sets. So the Patriots are going to have to decide if they want to shadow him with a key to lead, move to lead around wherever Jackson goes, or if they want the Buccaneers to dictate the matchup, which might mean seeing Kyle Arrington lined up across from Vincent Jackson, Alfonso Dennard lined up across from Vincent Jackson. So I think he's a guy that they really need to key on, because at 6'5", 230 pounds, he's a tough guy for anyone to guard. So Devin McCourty might have to get mixed in there, covering up over the top. But I think really just the passing game on each side of the ball is probably going to really determine this matchup. If Brady can find his other target and Patriots can limit Vincent Jackson, I think the Patriots can take this game, but those are also the aspects that the Buccaneers could really exploit the Patriots a little bit. And if they can't get that going, then this could definitely be one of those weird early season upsets that are brewing a little bit.
You know, I think it's kind of ironic that some of the Tampa Bay media, when they were talking to Bill Belichick earlier on the conference call, their first questions were about Aqib Talib. And, you know, what kind of a guy is he? How has he been in the locker room? You know, has he been easy to handle? Because I know he was somewhat, you know, malcontented. I don't want to call him a complete malcontent, but, you know, he wasn't necessarily a bad guy, but there was, you know, there were some rumblings of, you know, some discontent, let's say, while he was in Tampa, and that they thought a change of scenery would do him some good. And that's part of the reason why the Patriots were able to get him for a low round draft pick. And Bill had nothing but positive things to say about Talib. And so in that regard, I can't imagine that we wouldn't see Talib on Vincent Jackson, if not a lot, certainly before too long.
I agree. They've done that with Talib in the past, lined him up against the best receiver on the opposing team. We saw it last year in the playoffs against Andre Johnson. I think it's the best thing they can do. Talib's the biggest cornerback they have. He's over 6 foot, and I think he's about 6'1". So putting him against Jackson is, I personally think it's the right move. You don't really want to get Alfonso Dennard out there against him, because that's a major mismatch. Dennard's about 5'9", Jackson's 6'5". Mm. That's a little bit too much of a mismatch, I think, for me, for the Patriots. So, yeah, I think that they do slide Talib around. Wherever Jackson goes, Talib is going to go, and they'll switch things up a little bit for the Patriots. We'll have to see Arrington probably play outside a little bit. We'll have to see Dennard move around the field, but if that's what's going to work to shut down Jackson, then that's definitely what they have to do. It was an interesting matchup to watch during the summer when they had joint practices. Talib struggled a little bit during practice against Jackson, but then during the game, they completely shut him down. So obviously, in-game, Talib did a lot better than he did in practice, and I think the Patriots will need to see that again this week, definitely.
Yeah, and there'll be some help over the top, I would imagine, as well. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see that happen, at least initially, because, you know, you just don't know what kind of a weapon that you're going to get there. And the Bucs are going to be desperate to get off on a good offensive foot, because they've struggled offensively in the opening couple of weeks. And they're two kicks away and really, you know, maybe just a couple of plays away from being 2-0 themselves rather than 0-2. So this is not a typical 0-2, you know, loser type, no chance at making the playoffs type team. I think Patriots fans will be in for rude awakening if they go in thinking this is going to be anything other than very, very difficult for them on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think it's going to be a close game. It's going to be a tough matchup. And, you know, the other thing is that Josh Freeman, he's going to have to be on the top of his game this week.
Yeah.
This is a tough Patriots defense. So I think we'll actually see the the pass rush amped up a little bit as well. Some of those linebackers might be blitzing a little bit to get some pressure on Freeman back there.
Yeah, I would hope that that would be the case. Doug, it's great to visit with you. Thanks for taking the time. Can I tell everybody what our relationship is?
Absolutely.
Well, it's only because I want to represent your alma mater.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
See,
I'm proud of it.
Doug was. Now you're going to have to. You're going to have to remind me, what year did you graduate? Was it 08?
It was 08. Yeah.
08. Okay. Oh, I got it right. God, that was a stab in the dark too. Doug was one of my students at Emerson, and I have to admit that, you know, as a student of the sports journalism class at Emerson College.
Is he a crappy student?
No, he was not a crappy student. Thanks, Kevin. That was Kevin Collins, by the way, Doug. No, but I would admit that you were conflicted somewhat, and admittedly, you were conflicted about which direction you really wanted to take, you know, your career. Were you not?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Okay. I wanted to do the football thing. I was definitely interested in baseball at the time too. But I mean, I was doing some other things, and the journalism aspect of college, I was getting a little bit burnt out on it. But, you know, after I did take your sports journalism class, it really did tell me that that's what I wanted to do. And, I mean, not to really just heap praise on you excessively, but, no, I mean, I probably wouldn't be doing this if I hadn't taken your class.
Well, your check's in the mail, Doug. Well, I'm glad. Thank you for bringing that up. But I bring it up because, frankly, I love the fact that we've got, you know, and we're beginning to get a different, younger breed of aggressive journalist into the local community as well. For, you know, there's two guys on that staff, on the Nesson staff, that actually are graduates and took the class at Emerson. Ricky Doyle being the other one, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, our Red Sox beat writer.
Yeah, so, I mean, both you and Ricky, honestly, you were both similar in the class in the fact that, you know, you knew you wanted to be involved, you just weren't sure where you wanted to be involved. And I'm very happy that you were able to find your niche, because you guys are perfect examples of, you know, look, go out and find something that you can enjoy doing, and when you find it, hold on to it for dear life. And that's really all I tell, you know, the students nowadays. You know, go out and find what you can, because it's a dog eat dog, cutthroat. How many other cliches can I throw out there? It's that kind of world. But when you do find it, nurture it, hold on to it. Don't fumble it. Like, you know, well, okay, I won't say his name. Don't fumble the opportunity.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. The fact that I get to wake up every morning and look forward to going to work and enjoying my job, it's definitely a blessing. I appreciate that aspect of the job more than anything else, I think I'd say.
That's good to know. All right, well, you know what? I'm going to call on you to speak to class this next year, too. So, you know, keep up the good work, and we'll be reading, as always.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Thanks, John.
All right. Sounds like a plan. Doug Kide, again, who covers the Patriots for Nesson.com, New England Sports Network, for those that want to know what Nesson is, but it's NESN.com. You can read his stuff on the Patriots if you haven't already. You can follow him on Twitter at Doug Kide Nesson. He spells his last name K-Y-E-D. So it's D-O-U-G-K-Y-E-D-N-E-S-N. At Doug Kide Nesson is where you can find him on Twitter if you want to follow as well. There you go. Always good to hear from students and see them do well. It makes me actually feel like I'm accomplishing something in this life, you know?
It's quite the all-star cast you had there.
I know. Not bad, huh?
We had
luck will get you something every once in a while.
I had a similar thing, John. I graduated in 08, just like Doug, from the University of Massachusetts Amherst. And in my 4 years there, I was friendly with Mark Bertrand,
mm-hmm.
Jeff Howe.
Mm-hmm.
Was in a lot of my classes. Mm-hmm. Dan Duggan, who was also
at Herald. I didn't realize Jeff Howe was also that young.
Yeah, so we're
He's a dynamite beat writer for the Herald.
All of us were in all the same kind of sports writing, sports journalism classes. And fortunately enough, knock on wood, all of us, another kid actually, John, this kid by the name of Ben Badler, who's got about 1 million Twitter followers, mm-hmm. he writes for Baseball America.
Okay.
He studies like the prospects and all this stuff. And he's actually, I think, blown up the most out of all of us. But we've all turned out, knock on wood, pretty good.
That's remarkable that we're actually getting this kind of caliber of journalists from our local schools in-state here.
Which is what encourages, I think, a lot, or what should encourage a lot of the young kids aspiring to be, you know, like Doug or like Jeff Howe and all these guys.
And you guys have only been doing it for 5 years. Yeah, and look where you are. You're in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, if you bust your, you know what, the opportunities are there. So those kids that are listening.
That was one of the things that I did when I was just out of school. I was very lucky to be in the NBA at age 24. Actually, was
what position
it
23? Power forward?
No.
Point guard?
Point guard. No, as a broadcaster, obviously.
I know.
But it was because right place, right time, but I maneuvered myself to get in that position.
Yeah, there's also a lot of that, what you just said too, John. It's being at the right place at the right time, but putting yourself in a position to win the opportunity.
You have to
comes.
Have something, I think, on the ball.
Absolutely.
In order to be able to take advantage of that, you know, and there's no silver spoon under my tongue and not under your guys either. Nobody, you know, paved the way for you to get the jobs that you got. You earned them due to your own merits. And I think that's something that young journalists need to be aware of. You know, it's great to take advantage of your contacts and you're silly if you don't. But you still got to put in the work.
And it's a lot of fun for you as a teacher to see your students, you know, get these jobs out there.
No doubt.
And see them flourish. And it's a lot of fun for us to see our classmates that we worked with at the student radio station, the student newspaper. You know, you look up on TV and you're like, oh, hey, I was in that guy's class.
Yeah, exactly. I know that guy.
So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, we used to flick spit wads at him in class, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, it's all good. All right, so we've digressed, but you'll forgive the digression somewhat. All right, here we go. Other things coming up. What do we have here on what do we have on Twitter? Da, 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 da. Nothing new. Okay, good. Mike sends this on Facebook. I picked Kyle Arrington as a defensive player to watch this year. My analysis has to be due to the fact that he will be needed to make plays on third downs, and so far, so good. Absolutely. And I think I actually remember that, Michael, when we read your stuff earlier this year, when we first got the show launched again this year, that you picked Kyle Arrington in that regard. So far, he's needed to be big, and he has come up big. Outstanding. All right. Good observation right there. What else do we have here? I've got to make sure that everything is reset. All right. Here we go. Here comes email. It's only taking a little bit of time to get here. There it is. Jay sends this. Any word on how effective will be Stephen Ridley? Well, I assume you are referring, Jay, to when he returns, how effective he can be. And the honest answer to that is that we just won't know until he gets back. You know, he's got a broken wrist. I'm sure that he's, you know, continuing to keep up with his cardiovascular training. So in other words, he can get on the bike. Maybe he can do some running. Who knows? Even though he can't necessarily catch footballs, run footballs, he probably is going to at least walk around with a football for a while. You mean Ridley. I thought you were talking about Shane Vereen. My bad. How effective he'll be, really, in what regard? I mean, it's his football, right? He got into the job again last week, almost de facto, because there was no Ridley. I mean, there was no Vereen. Boy, I get those two guys mixed up. My apologies. Vereen kind of handed it over to him when he got hurt. I think we all realized that if he hadn't been hurt, Vereen was probably going to start last week. But being as it may, Ridley gets the job because Ridley was the starter beforehand. So how effective will he be? Well, ask the question to yourself. How effective was he last week against the Jets? My criticism, one of my nitpicks yesterday about the Jets game was I don't think that they actually stayed with the run enough in order for the run to have any effectiveness against the Jets. Now, a lot of that, and Eric and I, we spent some time talking about it yesterday, was due to the play by the offensive line was not stellar. In fact, by all means, going back and looking at the videotape, the Jets, you know, front four sort of ruled the roost on the line of scrimmage. They had a better day than did New England. Patriots weren't physical enough up front. Maybe that has something to do with the fact that really didn't have a good enough day running the ball. I frankly think that will be much the same case. The Patriots must be physical with Tampa Bay. And to that end, not only should Aqib Talib face up against Vincent Jackson, you know, in that matchup, but LeGarrette Blount's got to see the ball on Sunday. You know that because he's a former Buck, that he's got to have, you know, at least some extra desire here to show his former team that he can still play. Right? He's got to have a role. Jay says, is it due to his fumbling issues? He is not involved in the passing game as well as Vereen. It might be, Jay. I guess that's a fair assessment. I've always thought that Ridley could catch the ball just as well as Shane Vereen. But I think that because he has had the fumbling issues, that it's they probably just don't want to take a chance. I think that's legitimate. I wouldn't know any other real reason. I mean, because, again, in this offense, backs have to learn how to do multiple things, right? Just like any other position on this roster. So not only do you have to run the ball, you got to be able to catch the ball out of the backfield. You got to be an available target. You got to be somebody that Brady can rely upon. And while Vereen is brought in at change of pace, and by the very nature of being a change of pace guy, you're going to be involved in catching the ball. Ridley is your first and second down guy. And so naturally, if he's your first and second down guy, you're not going to be thinking about throwing the ball to him as much as you would, say, a third down guy when you need to pick up the yardage. Does that make sense? So in other words, the thought process probably isn't there with Ridley because he's thought of more as the every down back, even though there really is no such thing. That's sort of a misnomer now. There really is no such thing as an every down back anymore. There's a lot of specialization going here because they want guys to play different positions. But I would say that because of his fumbling issues, that probably doesn't help confidence with his pass-catching issues. Absolutely. Richard says, do you think Wes Welker will ever be a Patriot again? No. I guess I realize that's probably a little bit, you know, simplistic, but no, I don't. I mean, in 2 years' time, after he's done with his contract with Denver, my guess is that he and Peyton Manning probably go out together. I don't know. Manning still seems to look like he's getting stronger. So far be it from me to say that Manning can't play till he's 40, because maybe he can. Who the heck knows? I don't know. It may very well be that if he doesn't last past a season or two in Denver, that, you know, maybe the Patriots would, you know, give him one more run, or maybe they think enough of him to say, okay, you can retire a Patriot.
He'll only be 34 when he's done.
With his current deal, right?
Yeah, he'll be 34 when that deal ends.
For a slot receiver, that's Methuselah.
No, I know.
But, okay. Possibly. Possibly. John in South Carolina wrote this earlier. Rook, Big Al keeps saying how Brady struggles in first and goal in the red zone. Where is this proof? Because I cannot find it. Everything I can find from watching the game and stats show Brady is one of the best in the history of the sport. Wait, Tebow was good in college. That shows how good they will be in the pros? Like all those Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks that have gone on to be successful in the NFL? Tebow is not in the NFL because he is not good. No more needs to be said. I want to see some proof of either Tebow good in the NFL first and goal inside the 10 situations, or Brady bad at first and goal inside the 10. What the hell is the eye in the sky? Last 3 years passing in the red zone, Tom Brady follows only Drew Brees. I believe that is accurate. And let me stop here. Because I don't know that Al or anybody else could show you something Tebow did better. I think Al is simply going on Tebow and what he did in college, because Al is down in Georgia and he saw every single one of Tim Tebow's games at the University of Florida. So knowing what he did as a Florida Gator doesn't necessarily translate well to what you're going to do as an NFL pro. And I think we've all seen that, and even Al has to realize that. Could he do some things well? Absolutely. Did he do, you know, first and goal situations well? Sure he did in college. But again, you'd be taking the ball out of the hands of a guy who's one of the best ever in red zone situations, and that's Tom Brady. Now, is he successful right now? No. It's because you've got to have the supporting cast to go along. So, you know, could Tim Tebow come in and maybe help you out a little bit? He might. And we did make that argument earlier. He might. The problem is that you've pigeonholed him into a specific role that there just is no room for on this roster right now. You got to have versatility. You need to have versatility. If you don't have versatility, you might as well not even think about becoming a New England Patriot. You're going to play linebacker, you're probably going to play special teams. You're going to play offensive line, well, then you're going to, you know, if you're a tackle, then you're going to play guard and maybe play center. If you're a linebacker and you're not Rob Gronkowski, then you're going to line up either at fullback or H-back, or you're going to line it split out. That's all there is to it. There's two guys on this team. Two guys on this team whose roles are pigeonholed that you can say unequivocally they are this, and that is all they are. You can guess which two guys they are. Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski. Now, with all due respect, it might be harder to call a guy like Vince Wilfork something else other than nose tackle. But you could, at least in position name, call him a defensive end. You could. Even though he might not perform very well, but you could. Because the Patriots, you know, I think as we all know, they do a lot of hybrid, you know, type formations along the defensive front anyway. And in fact, when they move Chandler Jones to the inside and that quote unquote NASCAR, you know, alignment that the Giants made, you know, famous, and we talked about that again on yesterday's show. See how much stuff, if you missed yesterday's show, see how much stuff you missed? We talked about a lot of good stuff yesterday. But if you're lining up like that, then invariably, Jones comes to the inside. What does that make him? It makes Wilfork an end. If you're looking at it strictly from a lineup point of view. So there's two guys that really don't need to be flexible, that don't need to be, you know, different things other than what they are. And that's really about it. And it just so happens those two guys are exceptional at their particular jobs. So if he was an exceptional quarterback, he'd be on this team. He would have beaten out Ryan Mallett. But he didn't do it. Look, nobody was rooting harder for him than me. Al, I thought he was a good move when they picked him up. It just didn't work out. It's that simple. John also says, so with a healthy Edelman, Amendola, Sudfeld, and Vereen, you guys thought it was going to be 3-3 after six. You still think it's going to be 3-3? Please explain the logic because I don't understand. Yeah, I did because, quite frankly, I thought the learning curve for guys like Sudfeld and even Vereen, for that matter, would be such that there would be some inconsistency and maybe some confusion and not complete and total immersion into the playbook. And there will probably be, you know, some baby steps taken first because these guys have not been thrust into a primary role, John. Primary role. Star role. Starter role. Not being counted on to do it. They've been backup players. Vereen was, and he was a bit role player last year, and he spent most of the year hurt. Sudfeld's a rookie. Amendola wasn't in the system. Edelman hurt last year. So even healthy, I knew that there would be probably some rocky roads, bumpy roads to start with. Add the injuries to the equation. If this team ends up 3-0 and beats the Bucs this week, it will be fortunate, yes, but will also be needed because, again, as I mentioned in the opening hour today, I've taken a peek around the corner at what's coming. And that light at the end of the tunnel might be an oncoming freight train. You say we were sold on Amendola as was a better Welker. By who? I can't picture Bill standing up in front of the press saying Amendola is much better than Welker. That is based on people who have watched him play, reporters who have actually seen him play. He's bigger. He's probably a little stronger. He's certainly a little bit faster, and he's younger by 5 years. So because of that, I think you can understand the logic, John. I know sometimes it, you know, it takes you a while, but I can understand the logic why people would make that reach. That's a logical assessment, a logical reach to make. I ask because when you say we were sold on Amendola, it feels like you were saying you were lied to by someone. No, nobody lied. That was the general perception of what Amendola was going to bring to the table. That he could bring you the skills that Wes Welker had, but he potentially was a better player because bigger, stronger, faster, younger. It's only reasonable to assume, right? And then John says, you say throw to who, man, but the line needs to help block because everyone is in the box. You act as if a tight end has no other responsibility but to catch the ball. Our offensive line needs to hold long enough for the rookies to get open and Brady to get the ball to receivers without getting hit. Well, that's part of the reason why you haven't seen throw to who, man, but at the same time, you got to have somebody at the tight end position who is capable of catching the ball who can be a threat. We've seen Nate Solder line up at tight end quite a bit. You probably even heard his number called quite a bit by the official in the first couple of weeks because he's had to play tight end. Remember that Nate Solder played tight end early in his career at Colorado before he shifted permanently to tackle and then became a first-round draft choice, right? So, at any rate, they probably are doing that because they want the help blocking. So that's why you've seen Solder in the tight end spot. But when you got Hooman in there, you need to make him a target. If Sudfeld is healthy enough, you need to make him a target. Otherwise, they're just going to hang around in the box. They're going to make things difficult, more difficult for a guy like Edelman. It's just, that's just how it works. I'm going to give the last word today to Steve and Colleen, who says, let's take a collective breath. The Pats are all about grabbing the lunch pail and hat and then getting the job done. For the past years, we have managed to cobble together success one game and one week at a time. That is not ignoring the same level of talent is not available right now that we've had in the past. Tampa will be a great test for the Pats, as I believe that is currently a fairly even match across the board in most positions. Remember, Bill game plans to take away what teams do well. Now we just need to wait until Sunday to see how well we execute the plan. No question at all. No question at all. All right, there you go. All right, thanks to Doug Kide from Nesson for joining us. Of course, Big E, Eric Scalavino from PFW in the opening hour. Tomorrow's program, we dive in deeper into the Tampa Bay Bucks. You're going to tell me, Kevin, again, who it was that we got to be on the show tomorrow?
Yep, Rick Stroud.
That's right. Okay, thank you. Sometimes every once in a while, you have to hit me upside the head so I can reset. So there you go. Rick Stroud, Tampa Bay Times, will join us on the Bucks tomorrow. Russell Baxter, pro football guru, will be with us tomorrow as he is on each and every Thursday. We're going to game plan for the Buccaneers, kids. It's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. This won't be a walkover like so many people thought the Jets game would be, and the Jets game ended up being very, very close. I said 19-13 last week, and it was closer than that. I'll give you a little bit of a hint for tomorrow. My prediction tomorrow is going to be closer than that. Same Pats time, same Pats channel manana in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.